15 to 20 million jobs.
I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, which, as you know, serves the entire tri-state area, Philadelphia, southeastern Pennsylvania, and northern Delaware. I also want to let you know that if you receive that email this morning, kindly go to your email and send it to a family member and friend and invite them to tune in. They can go right to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Also, later this afternoon, we will send a rebroadcast of today's show, and do spread that around as well. We have a lot of good things to talk about today. And I first want to say happy Thanksgiving to all of you. This is the day before the big event when people will be gathering with family and friends to count our blessings and look forward to a positive future. I want to thank the people who are part of this broadcast. Every person that listens to our broadcast or reads my weekly commentaries on American Workers Need You knows the main goal of our broadcast has been to unite people in a very positive way. And I want to thank Larkin Connolly, who is a great force on our broadcast, the East Coast Vice President of SCORE, Mark Andel, the founder of the Made in America store, and Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and of course our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, who makes sure that everything keeps on its schedule. And I'm Michael Blihash, always very proud to be with you, and I'm very, very proud to go into the communities and hear directly from the people with their thoughts and their concerns. If we only had more of the major media doing what we have been doing in the last 15 or 20 years, America would never, ever be where it is today. I also want to take this opportunity to extend a thank you to the various radio broadcasters who replay my weekly audio commentary on their public service time. And that has really helped us gather a large number of people. And they're in several states. And I know very close broadcasters do it on their show. Some do it live, you know, making their own commentary weekly out of my commentary. But it really has turned into a movement all of its own. It's very good to know that we are able to help people understand the importance of what it is to get behind a positive movement. We've all been working together on this broadcast. And Larkin, Mark, Rich, Henry, I can't thank you enough. And Thanksgiving is a time to say thank you. And that's what I would like to say. Today, we have a lot of interesting things I want to talk about, including some of the events that will be taking place after Thanksgiving. But I first would like to say, hello, Larkin. How are you doing?
Hey, good morning, Michael. And to Rich and Mark, when he gets here, how are you? It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Once again, Florida shines with its beautiful climate. I'm doing well. I don't know if you want an opening remark from me, because if you do, I'm prepared.
Okay, we're ready. We want to hear it.
Oh, you want to hear it, do you?
Rich is ready.
Yeah, Logis better get ready. You know, I wanted to make a post-election qualifying statement for myself personally. I hope that in everything that I said pre-election, that it was obvious that I neither supported Hillary Clinton nor Donald Trump. And that I tried to stay pragmatic and not commit to either candidate, and I didn't. Ultimately, can tell you post-election that I voted for neither candidate. I created an undervote, which is probably the first time I've ever done that in my life, in which I did not vote for any candidate for president. I voted for everybody else on the and every other issue on the ballot, but I didn't vote for anybody. But I have to say this, and I've been criticized of late by a lot of different people, that I think is what I've been saying, that Donald Trump has an opportunity here to be a really great president. The country is in a position where it needs a leader, a strong leader. And I think once everybody gets rid of this notion that they can do anything short of legislate and opine on positions that Donald Trump takes, bills that he introduces, relationships that he develops on the foreign side, that that Donald Trump is given an opportunity. My comment that he has a chance to be one of the greatest presidents we've ever had raises a lot of eyebrows amongst people who obviously don't agree with me. And my comment is not steeped in any element of proof that he's done anything in the past that would indicate to me that he is going to be a great president. So my comment is steeped almost totally in hope, that he hears that remark from a lot of people around the country, and that he accepts the challenge and moves forward as a great and good president that gets things done. You know, he has done some things early on that have impressed me. His reaching out to men and women who were so terribly and viciously critical of him as an individual and as a person shows that he has broad shoulders, and that that he's willing to bury the campaign hatchet. On some occasions, I suspected he was going to bury it in their heads, but he hasn't done that yet. So I'm impressed. I get the feeling that he understands that change doesn't come to Washington. It doesn't. Change never comes to Washington. Change comes through Washington. And it is going to be his actions that will create that change and will be spread throughout the country and will create this solidarity that that we all live in the greatest place in the world, and we have to rise above our personal feelings and allow him to try to get the job done.
Very well said, Larkin. Absolutely the best. As I said the day after the election, the results are in. It's now up to all Americans to join hands and work for the benefit of America. That's something that's the most important thing we can do. And we now have to wait for the first 100 days after President-elect Trump takes office to see what's really going to be happening. We hear a lot of stuff in the media, but the media lost some of its luster, as far as I'm concerned, with all their polls and everything that didn't add up the way they thought it would. Right now, America has a president, and we have to let that president complete his term and then direct all of our discussions on what the new president has on his agenda, how it'll be helping America. And he's, as a businessman, I'm depending on him. And of course, we will be very critical of him, as we are of any other person that doesn't do what is best for America.
We're not asking anybody, Michael, to sit on their hands. That's
right.
That's not what democracy is about. He needs loyal opposition. I personally would like there to be a constitutional amendment that says America elects a Republican or a Democratic president, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic House, that party has to give up one of those elements, and it usually would be the House. It scares me for one party to have total control of the legislative.
Now, I don't remember when that happened last.
Oh, it's happened.
It's happened, but I don't remember when it happened last. But it's always good to have the opposition both sides of the, you know me, I'm a four-party system guy, but right now we're still in the two-party system. So I see what you're saying, because there should always be an opposing point of view to keep the conversation going.
Nobody needs to sit on their tongue. Nobody needs to you know, hold their tongue in any way, shape, or form. That's how this works, and that's why it works. So I expect to hear from the Bernie Sanders of the world, and I expect to hear and hope that it's constructive criticism, and they're asking for things to happen that are better for this country.
And you're right, Larkin. I hope it is constructive criticism, because, you know, when I listen to the national media, I'm tired of it already. All these critics and these pollsters, they lost their luster. It seems that they're just talking to, you know, fill airtime. We need somebody to really tell us what has to be done, what is being done to help America. Most importantly, I'm interested in hearing not what's wrong. I'm interested in hearing what we're doing together to make America better, get our jobs back, our businesses growing, people with smiles on their faces again.
Michael, you can't sell the press and the job that they have short. They have to be one of those checks and balances that fully reports the things that are happening in Washington to all of the citizens. I mean, that's their responsibility. We can't ask them to sit down and not do that.
Well, that is fine, but as far as them being fortune tellers, I think that that's over.
Well, whatever. All I know is that the press has a responsibility now. I think it's halfway entertaining to me that Trump, that his press secretary or whoever, asked attaché, told the press that he was down for the night, and he snuck out the back door and went to a restaurant. That cracks me up, and I think he's setting the table for a circumstance where he's just not going to allow the press to to completely invade his space. He's got to be free form, and he's got to be honest with the public, and I expect that he's going to do that. But if he does these kind of gimmicks and then doesn't have press conferences and doesn't speak to the press freely, then, you know, somebody's got to advise him that, you know, that's our main way of discovering what he's doing and whether we agree or disagree with what he's doing.
Now, Rich, did you hear that the president-elect Trump had a special news conference 2 days ago with all the press there in New York?
Good morning, Michael, Larkin, and everyone, to our listeners. And so I don't get caught up in my rants later, a happy Thanksgiving to everyone, in case I don't mention it later. And Larkin, thank you for your candor about what you did on Election Day. I wouldn't have a problem with Connolly as Secretary of State if you're so inclined to do that job, Larkin. It might not be a bad dual role, Secretary of State and SCORE. I did see, Michael, as a former journalist, I watched intently. I've always watched the media. I've always observed the media, but I really watched intently this election. And I was left after the election with a combined feeling of sadness and some disgust, actually, at what it is that we saw with our media. And the thing about the polls, when I listened to our major media talk about how they got it wrong and how they didn't see it coming, there's actually a very simple answer why that happened, Michael. I'm going to share this with our listeners, and it's in line with what I've said in the show before. There are millions of people in this country who were basically afraid to say publicly that they were going to vote for Trump. Now, ask yourself the question why that is. And the reason for that is because of this kind of soft version of Stalinism that exists in America, where speaking your mind, having a freedom of speech, is going to incur the wrath of all of the major media and their Hollywood and educational people who are in cahoots with them. That's why the polls got it wrong, because no one wanted to talk to the media for fear of having their integrity impugned or having a bunch of agitators who don't even vote come and protest their business or where they live. So that's why it happened. That's why the polls got this wrong, Michael. I don't think a lot of people had that kind of fear to say, I will vote for Mitt Romney, or they had that kind of fear to say, I'm going to vote for John McCain. But it happened this time. And that's a reflection of this censorship culture that is perpetrated. I'm sorry, Larkin, but it is. It's perpetrated by the I would say, the fringe side of the left. But unfortunately, you know, those who lean that way are not really fringe anymore. They're mainstream. When they're everywhere in Hollywood and entertainment and the media and social media, Michael, and our schools and universities, it's really hard to escape them. So that's why the polls got it wrong. So as a media person, yes, I watched the story unfold, and I'm going to continue to watch and see what's going to happen with the press relationship with Trump. The press has to be allowed to, I guess, do their jobs, but it's going to be up to the marketplace, i.e. the consumers, to determine where they're going to get their news from. And major media is suffering right now because people simply don't trust them. And there's always been that distrust, but now that we saw from the WikiLeaks stuff that came out how there was a full-blown collusion and conspiring with the Democrats, I think people looked at that and said, this isn't simply media bias, this is like quasi-propaganda.
Right.
From our free and open press. And that's a very big distinction between bias. Like, I'm biased to have Larkin Connolly be Secretary of State, but if I conspire with a major party to block everyone else out to get Larkin there, that's collusion. I mean, that's borderline propaganda is what that is, and that's what the distrust is now coming from.
You know, I'm going to say this about me being Secretary of State. You think the Libertarian Party candidate looked goofy not being able to identify what a LEPO is. Please don't ask me any serious questions about the technical. You know, I try to study foreign policy just as much as the next guy, but I'm not sure the Secretary of State is. Second of all, I lead with my family and ask them, you know, what's the best thing to do. I can guarantee you what the response of my family would be at the suggestion that I be Secretary of State. Listen, we all come from a capitalistic background. We all come from free enterprise. We all come from you buy something for 50 cents, you sell it for a dollar, and you hope your expenses aren't more than 50 cents. And when you don't perform, you go broke. When you don't perform, you go home with your tail between your legs, and you've lost at that game. The fact of the matter is that the press did one of the most egregious, stupid, unbelievably idiotic jobs at covering this election. They were so bad, it was almost laughable. And I went to YouTube and I was looking to see what was being said by a few people on the side. The number of opportunities for me to watch all of these different reporters, mostly liberal progressive reporters, melt down. That's exactly what they called it. These reporters melted down on radio, on television. A meltdown, imagine. And that's just shameful. It's absolutely shameful. And if anybody supports the performance of the press in this last election, they're wrong, deeply and terribly flawed in their opinion.
Yeah, Larkin, I'm with you. I mean, I've got friends who are local journalists, and I'm not going to name names, but they just don't seem to get it. And I think a lot of people don't seem to get it. And you mentioned free enterprise about when you don't make it, you go out of business, you figure out what to do next. We've had a very long, I think, political culture where for the politicians, they, you know, even when they don't do so well, they seem to always get, back into office, which is why we've talked about term limits. Donald Trump has talked about term limits. I'll pray for that, you know, that happens. And I think right now that principle of what to do next is it's a very important question for the Democratic Party. Despite what the media will have you or try to have you believe, the country was very, very red on their maps. And the fact that there's a lot of talk still in the news about popular vote and electoral vote, well, for our listeners, they should know that if you look at the vote count, Michael, if you look at the votes just in California and in New York, Hillary Clinton has an over 5 million vote lead in New York and California combined, but yet has 1.5 million, whatever it is, throughout the country. That statistic right there is exactly why the Electoral College exists, for that reason.
Exactly.
Okay. That's exactly why the college was put in place, which, granted, back then it was not 50 states, it was 13 colonies. But the logic behind the Electoral College was we have to find a balance between really big colonies sort of like, like overtaking and influence the small states. So nothing is perfect. I mean, this idea of utopia is a very dangerous idea, but the college went into place for that reason. And in addition to that, if I could just get wonkish for one moment for our listeners, I bet you, I'd be willing to bet with virtual 100% certainty that the popular vote difference is actually much smaller because states don't count absentee ballots unless there's a margin of difference that would warrant counting those ballots. So if there's a margin of 1,000 votes and there's let's say 1,300 absentee ballots, well, then the absentee ballots get counted. If it's a difference of 4,000 votes and 1,000 absentee ballots, the absentee ballots don't get counted. This is also the reason why, for example, in reality, George Bush, with virtual 100% certainty, got more votes than the 537 that we all talk about to this day throughout the country, and Al Gore got the popular vote. So people have to understand. If you don't agree with it, it's fine, but you have to understand it's not a buffet. Our history is not a buffet. This is not a problem with the left, right? They love revisionism and changing things as if that somehow magically changes things that happened in the past. The Electoral College has very sound logic. And I just want to propose a rhetorical question, Lark and Michael, for everybody. Imagine the reverse occurred. Let's say Trump got more popular vote, but Hillary Clinton won the election, which, by the way, remember when the media kept telling us the Electoral College was skewed for the Democrats? Imagine Clinton got the Electoral College but lost the popular vote. What would the narrative right now be in the media? You would hear the progressive media talking about the intent of the founders. Now, Larkin, when's the last time you heard progressives talk about the intent of our founders? I remember never.
Never. My memory is the same as yours. They constantly say our founders weren't around in 2016. So much has changed. No. Nope. Sorry. I don't buy it, and I don't think anybody else with a sound brain buys it either. That's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous argument.
You know, I think listening to people in my travels and listening to you guys over the last couple of weeks, I really think that we have to think of America now as a business. How are we operating our business, at a profit or a loss? I can safely say that when a person, Larkin, counseling people, you should know, and Rich knows, and Mark knows, when a person is in business, you don't try to change the customers. You change your business format to accommodate the needs of the customers. And that's something we haven't been doing in America. We've allowed the people in Washington to do whatever they want. We are the customers, the taxpayers, and they just kept, you know, racking up the debts and the bills and everything else. I think maybe we will see some new ideas with a businessman looking at it at this time. I see it happening with Democrats and Republicans that are discussing on various programs that they want to see something different. So maybe this is it. As I said, If you're in business, you don't try to change your customers, in this case, the taxpayers. You change your business format to accommodate the customer.
Well, Michael, let me ask you a question. Larkin, I'd like to ask you on air here. You know, if when I look at the inner cities, that was a big issue this election, and for good reason. And in fairness to Donald Trump, he went into areas that have been long neglected by the Republicans. He went in there, gave his speeches, talked about these issues. When I look at the inner cities, okay, and I'm going to try to get past the Democrat-Republican thing here for a moment, because I think that paradigm is actually eroding in front of us, which is a good thing. But we can't deny either that the vast majority of these urban centers, these inner cities, are long-time Democrat-run. So to me, Larkin, I think if I'm going to start with how to start getting stuff fixed, I'm going to start with free enterprise. You know, I'm going to start with free enterprise capitalism, not crony capitalism, not big government capitalism. I'm going to start with free enterprise capitalism, and we can. There's other things to talk about: law enforcement. You know, the fact that we've got a lot of career criminals in America, Michael. We do. We have a lot of people who've made a career out of crime, and we're forgiving people. You know, we're very forgiving people. We understand mistakes happen, right? But you know, when the guy who, you know, has a 23 bullet point rap sheet, you know, has these problems, you know, we got to look at that too, right, Larkin? But I'm saying, I want to start with free enterprise. That's where I want to go.
So that's a laudable. It's a great suggestion. I had a plan that looked unbelievably like a Roosevelt plan, and I was telling it to one of my favorite progressives in the world, and she and I were having a discussion, and she said, "Well, what's your plan?" And I said, "I want to take 30% of the defense budget, because we can annihilate." You take that. We're the number one powerhouse in military might in the world. You take the next three and put them together, and we could annihilate them in 20 minutes, maybe an hour and 20 minutes. We don't need to add additional might. I mean, we've got that covered. We truly do. And maybe we need to make an investment in military intelligence. I'm not sure, but I certainly think that I could take 30% of our military budget, of the military complex's egregious amount of money that we spend with them. And she said, that's great. And then I'm going to take 20% of the entitlements budget. And the immediate response was, you can't do that. And I'm saying, wait a minute. 50% of the United States' budget, 50% of our budget, is spent on entitlements. And you can't give up 20% of that? Because my plan's going to employ people, so there'll be fewer people looking for those entitlements. And let's hope that this program reduces people that need for entitlements. But that was their immediate reaction. Now I'm saying give all this money to the Corps of Engineers at the Defense Department and let them, smart engineers, some of the country's best, and let them rebuild the infrastructure with $20 and $30 an hour jobs. Not these nickel and dime, 7 hour, and $15 an hour shovel-ready jobs. No. We don't want that. We want a serious battery of jobs that put men back to work so they can support their families, and this definitely will work. Well, it's a great idea, but boy, I don't know about taking money from the entitlements budget. And I thought, you know, progressives don't get it. They don't understand pure bread and, pure economics, guns and butter. They just don't get it. If they want to do something, just do it. And we'll just print more money or whatever. They are so tax and spend, it's frightening. And Trump is going to solve that, I hope. Again, on my part, it's just sheer hope. He's going to resolve his tax and spend, and he's going to run this like one of his Trump businesses. And he's not going to freely pay everybody. You know, I heard something the other day. I don't know if it's true, because you never know unless you highly investigate your sources. But I heard somebody say the other day that he almost touches every invoice that comes through the Trump Organization. He sees every one of them and decides whether they paid too much or too little or whether it needs to be, you know, this is business. This is how business operates. And progressives don't get that. You don't cheat people out of money. But if you have a dispute with one of your suppliers, you have a dispute. And if the supplier says, well, this guy's running for president, watch this. He didn't pay me. He wouldn't pay me for work I had completed. Well, really? Can we talk about this a little bit more completely than he didn't pay me? I mean, come on, guys.
You're absolutely right. And by the way, Larkin, the problem we're witnessing in America for years is, first of all, the people in the national media and the national elected leaders in Washington, 95% of them were never in business themselves, so they really don't know how America's businesses have to struggle, and I mean struggle, to keep their products on the market, keep people employed, and pay additional taxes, and then get hit with all these regulations.
They're completely ignorant of free enterprise. And I mean, when I say ignorant, I don't mean a little on the dumb side. They have no idea, virtually no idea. But we're talking about a body of men, however there are, a little over 500, that sit in Capitol Hill, that do their own raises. They dictate their own raises and their own benefit packages. Where's that happen in the world?
Very well said, Larkin. Boy, I'll tell you, when you come out, you're going to go out on a few places and talk with the people. That's exactly what's on their mind. Everybody says they're getting a $10,000 raise, and the senior citizens are getting $4 a month. $4 extra a month. So that's totally ridiculous. But because they're, you know, being pampered in Washington, they really don't get into the communities to see what's going on. And that's a big, big problem.
I think, Michael, also, and I'll preface this by saying what I said before the election, which is that, you know, Donald Trump is not a political savior. He's not a political messiah. That doesn't – those who aren't hooked on the fetish and drug of government don't really view government that way. Now, I know Larkin has said that President Reagan to him could walk on water, but that's okay because this is years later. You know, this is years later. We're talking about that. And there's a reason why Reagan is admired by both parties. But we're not hooked on this. You know, Larkin, you're talking about, again, big entitlements, big, 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 big government. Our government's never been bigger. And the gains to the gazillionaires of the gazillionaires have never been greater. That is not a coincidence. This is why part of the base of the Democrats are gazillionaires. And of course, people who don't know that, Larkin, it's because of where they get their information from. And they only get it from their little world of their little bubble unicorn narrative. When in reality, when you look outside of that, we start to understand and peel the onion back a little bit. So the Democratic Party has, Michael, both parties have an opportunity in front of them. The Republican Party has an opportunity that perhaps they didn't deserve. But the American people said, you know what, we're going to give you a second chance. We're going to elect Trump. We're also going to elect a Congress that can work with him. Because the separation of powers is very, very, very important, right? Congress is the powerful body in Washington. So that's a very important thing. So you have the Democrats, the Republicans there, but then you have the Democrats who have to, they've got to punt, and they've got to sit back and say, okay, where did we go wrong? Why are we so out of touch? Why is it that people don't listen to us when we shout and yell and scream from our ivory towers? And so the Democrats have to come to the table, Larkin, and I think with the Republicans, and sure, there's some common ground, there could be some compromise, but Americans, I think, showed in this election that some issues are really non-negotiable. You know, our national security, the safety of our people, okay, this is non-negotiable. I think people also got really, really sick and tired and for some of us, really unnerved by how we've had a government for the last 8 years, government agencies like the Justice Department, which have sought not to be so justice-oriented, but to be activist-oriented. And you can go and find, our listeners can go find the published reports about how the Inspector General of the Justice Department himself said that the lawyers who get hired in the Justice Department all have activist backgrounds. So there was a repudiation. I believe there was a repudiation of this culture that, yes, both parties have created, but it's been perfected by the Democrats, of big, humongous government that wants to entangle its claws in every aspect of our lives.
Well, you know, Rich,
fair,
you know, as
fair,
you're...
And Michael, fair or unfair against the Democrats, fair or unfair, that's what people, I believe, is one of the key things that they rejected this time around.
Michael, I just wanted to stick in here that I know that there are people listening that agree and a fair amount that disagree. So I just wanted to give our number out so that we could take a phone call or two, if in fact somebody's interested in calling in. And that number, I believe, is 215-922-5300.
Right.
215-922-5300. If you disagree with Rich and I understand that Mark has just joined us.
Yes, he has.
If you disagree, you know, please chime in. I'm not adverse to discussing anything that I've said, and I want to reiterate what Rich said. This is not all on the Democrats.
No.
Our situation in this country is far and away not all on the Democrats. Government grew under Republicans. The size of government grew under Republicans. The Republicans became tax and spend in the last 20 years.
Right.
I'm not attacking Democrats under any circumstance, because the Republicans were just as guilty. Well, maybe not quite as guilty. I agree with you there. But they were. They really didn't govern when Obama was there. You know, all of this stuff about Obama this and Obama that. You know, no one went to jail over all of this Wall Street stuff, over what happened in 2008. They were fined a bunch, but who cares about fining Wall Street? You can't fine them more money than they have. Nobody under the Obama administration went to jail for what I find some of the most egregious activity in a free enterprise environment. And, you know, he gave some great speeches about race relations. And every time we had another gun, you know, another police shooting, Black Lives Matter, you know, he gave a speech in Philadelphia during the campaign. He gave a great speech in Charleston at the funeral of one of the women that was shot down in Charleston. But you know what? Speeches are not public policy. And no public policy came out of the White House. Nothing. And then somebody said to me the other day, well, he introduced a bill 2 months ago. 2 months ago? 2 months ago, he's president. He's been president for 8 years, and not a thing was done about introducing any bill that would improve crime and the way it's treated in this country, reform in that category. I mean, it's just ridiculous. He's going to, you know, history's going to be very kind to him, and he's going to get pretty decent treatment. But, boy, don't anybody parade around me and tell me that he's one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. That's just malarkey.
You know, guys, as I listen to all of you and I prepare to welcome Mark, I just want to say, as we close off this portion of our broadcast, I think it's time for the media to grow up. For years, they told us everything that was wrong. Maybe it's time to be balanced. Tell us about sharing ideas, what could help. Look at an issue. Look at all sides of it. Not take one particular side and try to go run with that. And let's talk about the difficulties of businesses staying operational in America. How about talk about the loss of jobs and what it's done to family stability, to neighborhoods, local businesses? That's part of what the media should be doing and should have been doing from day one with this election and 20 years ago. But we've devoted too much airtime to negativity. And with that, I'm going to ask Mark, how are you doing, guy?
Good. How are you, Mike, Rich, Larkin, Henry? Thanks. Sorry I had some personal matters that come up suddenly. But, no, I missed your beginning of the show, but I'm sure it was interesting. You know, Mother Nature had blessed us out in West New York, for me at least, and our team with the first snowfall of the winter. So we had almost a foot in our south towns, but our Rochester plant got hit with 2 foot plus between Sunday and, you know, we went from a 70 degree Friday to a 25 degree Sunday.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you know, and then we got the biggest week, you know, holiday week. Black Friday starts Friday. And, Mike, I hear small business weekend, support your locals and small business all over. Even some signs around coming back. I was out of town for a couple of days. It was nice to see Veterans Day really kicked it off up here in West New York with the retail shopping and the colder weather and the rain and stuff gets people into the malls. But I'm telling you, these people are fired up. They believe. And, you know, I stress, you know, vote with your dollar. Go out. This holiday season, this Black Friday, think about these Americans that need jobs and how you directly as a consumer, the customer, can help these people. Because I see it. We're ready for it. My team's ready. The stores. But we're getting a lot of respect. And, you know, thanks to you, Mike, your show, and, you know, our team, I can't say enough for all we've accomplished, though. And I think it's time to get positive. One country, one team. There's a lot going on out there. Geez, New York State just indicted 8 more people off the governor's administration board up here. There's corruption everywhere, and I think you guys were talking about it, but I don't want to touch on that too much without knowing what you said already.
Yeah, no, it's true. You know, this Saturday, I'm going to plead with everybody. Friday, well, it's Black Friday. And Rich, tell us why Black Friday is called Black Friday. People ask me, I want to hear from you.
You know, Michael, I'm going to plead a little bit of ignorance here. I think it has something to do with, isn't it have to do where typically retail finally gets in the black?
That's right.
Profit here. Is that what it is?
That's right. The last quarter of the year is so important, and Black Friday puts them in the black. People always ask me, why is it called Black Friday? I said, well, that's what it is.
And, Mike, I just want to add, you know, Larkin, you help a lot of entrepreneurs. Rich, you are an entrepreneur. Henry, you know, you're going to go shopping. You're sporting. We're all working for a living and trying to get a piece of our dream. But people don't realize in retail business how important the last 30 days, it's actually 30 days from Black Friday to Christmas of shopping time. Even my banker all the time, number one, they ask me, Mark, you're buying plows in June, snow removal equipment. What if it don't snow? I said, that's the risk factor. And then they say, you know, how big could your fourth quarter be? In retail, in my business, the fourth quarter is everything, but it really comes down to the 30 days. And now it really comes down to the 2 weeks before Christmas. And that's what all these retail shops, the mom and pops, the locals wait for. That last 2 weeks, believe it or not, the rest of the year is for just keeping the lights on and hopefully paying your payroll and keeping them top expenses down. But that's how critical and sensitive this retail business is. So do your part. But I'm telling you, buy made in America, because you want to fix your potholes. You want to get people to work. You, the consumer, can make more difference than anybody.
And when you are out on Black Friday or this coming Saturday, November 26th, Small Business Saturday, make sure you take a look at all the labels of the items you pick up. And when you can, go out of your way to tell the storekeeper, hey, I'd like to see products of this type made in America also featured at your store. It's the biggest thing we have been able to do with this movement. Make people look at labels, discuss with others what happened to the products we used to have in our stores that were all American made. If you go into your closets and look at things that you purchased 20 years ago, you'll see it's all made in America. It's just in this last 20 to 25 years, the push of foreign-made products that flooded the stores has really killed our employment base. And that's why we're keep growing all these public service programs and welfare programs to hide the fact that America doesn't have jobs. So when you're out there this Friday, Black Friday, check those labels. Try to direct your money to Made in America, of course. And Saturday is a Small Business Saturday. And remember, also our campaign will be the first Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of December, which is National Small Business Weekend every month. But as Mark said, the last few days, this is the biggest time of year, because majority of the people, no matter what they're celebrating, they will give something to family members and friends during this end of Christmas or the beginning of Hanukkah or whatever they're going to be celebrating now before the end of the year. So do what you can to help your local businesses first.
Well, great, Michael. Agreed. Well said. Thank you.
You know, I want to take this opportunity that now that I have all of you together, this Thursday is Thanksgiving. Wow, what a very special day for all of us to say thanks to family and friends and to make sure everybody knows, you know, that they're loved and appreciated. It's also a good time to talk about some positive things. I'm not talking any politics this year. I'm just telling people how important our Buy American Made campaign is and let them know, make sure they tune into the broadcast, send it around to family and friends. This is the time of year you can make a major impact on what's happening. Your example, your words mean more in a positive way than you realize. The politics, you'll always find somebody wants to fight you to the death. But I'm not wasting my time this year. I haven't been wasting my time since the election. I tell people the election is over. We have to give the new president a chance. The people have voted. It's over. Thank you. Let's go to the next subject. And the next subject is we now have to hold the new president accountable to make sure he says that he's going to try to get jobs back, lower regulations, bring that money that the corporations have all over the world instead of America, bring those dollars back to America, get that infrastructure moving. Those are the types of things that I'm going to be holding Donald Trump accountable as he begins his administration. Mark, you know yourself. I said earlier, the people, you're in business, you don't change your demand your customers to adapt to your line of thinking. You adapt to their line of thinking and try to make everybody go together. Well, that's not how it's been in America all these years. These people in Washington just wanted to do whatever they wanted to do, the way they wanted to do it. They knew best. Most of them have never been in business. Most of them have never paid a payroll, never had to pay the FICA taxes and pay the medical benefits, none of that. So they walk in this balloon world. They're living in a balloon. And I think this election, from what I hear from the people, one pin broke the balloon.
You know, Mike, and I know so many people in business, and they got a little hope from this election. But, you know, business has never been so tough. You know, you're used to be, I don't want to say fun, but a little less serious, and we're always in survival mode, and we've been in survival mode, trying to get them expenses paid. Everything's kind of against us. We got to get where they're helping the entrepreneurs, the inventors. We're talking about your dream, whatever it is, allowing people to live their dream and provide for their families. And this is a great time of year. Again, happy Thanksgiving, guys. You know, spend time with your loved ones and family, and that's what it's all about. But, you know, we want this goodness to continue for the future of our children. And I think everybody here on the show and listening's all made a difference. And I think the reset button's been hit. It's going to take a lot of time, a lot of work, but we're gonna move forward. But we got to come together.
But you're right. The enthusiasm has to come from the regular American person. The person who wants to see good things happen. You know, during the month of November, as we began American Made Month, it really did allow a lot of people to think, what can we do more to help businesses that are manufacturing, assembling, promoting, distributing, and selling American made products? You know, by speaking up and looking at the labels, that's the easiest thing to do, and yet it's very effective because it embarrasses the people behind the counter. If you keep bringing it up every time you go in, it embarrasses the store owners, and it also begins to make the store owners and the personnel manager and the store managers think, we got to do something to keep these people happy. Let's do it. Where I shop, they've already pulled in more American-made items than even I thought that they would do.
You know, I was listening to a talk show, I think it was Friday night, Rich, I might have tried to give you a call late, but a lady had called in, and I was just going down the freeway, and the lady said, well, this elect Donald Trump wants to bring jobs, and I just think jobs are going to create business and more business, and then we're going to have more pollution. So I don't know if we really want jobs. And I'm like, oh, my God.
I wonder why
so many people came out on Election Day and said, we don't want someone like that picking our government. Shock of shock.
It scares me.
Oh, Sean, boy.
I can't believe it.
Well,
oh, boy.
Mark, I mean, so you're telling me that you're suffering up there with a big snowstorm?
Yeah, we got, you know,
Buffalo. Or is that very profitable for you?
Well, no, it's great because, you know, last year we came off a really light snow. The year before, we had a really heavy snow. Last year, I got stuck with like 90 snow plows and all our snow removal equipment had no repairs. So anybody in the snow winter-related industry, if it's selling tires, if it's selling batteries, towing service, collision service, they all took a really big loss last year. And it's hard after a light winter, a very, very low amount of snow. And then this year to come into it, people are skeptical. Is it going to snow? And you wouldn't believe the people that wait and that they don't, you know, lock in with their contracts. They don't lock in and they wait and they think maybe winter won't happen. Well, this past weekend they announced it about Friday that this whole area was going to get between 2 inches to 20 inches. Well, West New York, right where I am, got only a dusting. My house got about 4 inches. Southtown's got about 12 inches. But my Adam Barkley that runs my plant four, we call, in Henrietta right by Rochester, he ended up with 20 inches plus Monday, Tuesday. They made world news, actually. They showed a little bit. And, boy, was that a blessing for us, Mike. It really gets the phone call. It helps us move the product. And you want it in November. You don't want a warm December because – you know, when you're into this industry, if it's a ski resort or a tubing facility or whatever, you need the snow. You need the winter to show up. So it's a good kickoff for us with the winter weather.
I love that, the winter to show up.
I had a good cook, and Mark,
Mother Nature's
my best
manufacturer.
I had a good kickoff also for winter. Me and my wife took the baby to the beach. You know, hit the waves with the paddleboard. And Mark, I just have to say, and guys, this is my last thing for the day, and I'm going to defer to Floor here. The very nice lady who talked about jobs and pollution. Next time you see her, let her know the Earth has existed for 5 billion years. It's survived every nuclear war, every ice age, every hurricane, every typhoon, every tornado, every tsunami, every heat wave, every oil spill, every meteor, every dinosaur, every piece of styrofoam, every car ride, every plane ride, every fish taken from the sea. Go listen to George Carlin talk about environmentalism. The planet is fine. It's the people who are fill in the blank.
as long as that big light bulb keeps going, Rich, we're okay, huh?
The planet is doing just fine. It survived every plastic bag and every piece of coal that's been mined. We've been around 5 billion years. The Earth will be here long after we go.
Well said.
Rich, I might have to take you to task on that. I agree. I think there is reality. There's perception. And then there's this hysteria about our environment. Are we going through a climate change? Yeah, we are. Are we causing some of this climate change? And could we amend the way we live to make it a stronger environment and a better planet? I think so. I don't know that it would be smart to take 350 million cars off of the road and put them somewhere. And I don't know that, you know, that our electric grid is weak and it bothers me and I worry about it. But I don't know that shutting that down and going completely to wind generated or solar energy is really a bright move. This country, in its inimitable fashion, has a way of progressing through these issues. And every week that you drive down the street or I drive through Jacksonville, I see 1, 2, 3 more solar panels. I see another wind mill going up. And I think we're moving in the right direction. But this idea that every time I get on a jet and fly to Philadelphia to do some great work for SCORE that I'm polluting, well, listen. We send a 757 up into the air to carry one man around the East Coast and around the Midwest to campaign for a Democrat at our expense. And tell me about that footprint right there.
Yep.
Larkin, I'd say, look, hallelujah to that. I have a great starting point for all this. As soon as every celebrity and billionaire Democrat voter ceases the use of their private jets, I'll take the rickshaw everywhere.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have to take a moment to just say, and I mean a moment, and then we'll go to closing remarks. I want to thank and offer Thanksgiving greetings from our daily sponsors here on 860 AM, who include Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, Mr. Chester Kshanovsky, and everyone from Sedena's Auto Body Shop, Mr. Joseph Drobot and the members of the Polish Roman Catholic Union of America, Mr. Michael Steinman, attorney at law, Dr. Eva Machak, as well as the gang from Polka Deli in Port Richmond, Polish American Travel Service, Giorgio Foods, and also Washington Savings Bank, Martin Bednarek, president, Yolanda Konopatska DeCipio, attorney at law, and also Mr. Frank Spulla, president of the PNA. And also remember, best wishes to you and yours from Mark Andel and everyone from the Made in America store. Check him out on the internet at madeinamericastore.com. Special greetings also from State Senator John Sabatina and Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack. Also, best wishes from everyone from the Polish Roman Catholic Union of America and the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union and our supporters from the Sugar House Casino in Philadelphia. Well, gentlemen, this was another interesting program. I want to take this opportunity on behalf of all of us in the Blihash and Rott family to wish you and yours, your family, the very best. I'd like to offer this opportunity for you to give some closing remarks. We'll begin with Mark.
Yeah, Mike, I want to tell you and Rich and Larkin and Henry and all our listeners, happy Thanksgiving, and support the country you live in, because that makes it common sense. Go out and buy Made in America top quality products and have fun, but enjoy Thanksgiving, guys.
Wonderful. And Dr. Rich Logis.
Guys, great show today. Thank you to our listeners. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We have a lot to be thankful for, and I look forward to everyone having a great holiday.
And Dr. Larkin.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving, certainly to everybody at Made in America, but to all of our listeners, and for that matter, to all Americans.
And Dr. Henry.
Larkin, I've never been more aligned with you today, but I can't believe you don't like Bernie after all the stuff you've been saying today.
I would have voted for Bernie.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Spread the word. Go out and support all of your local businesses. And spread the word about American Workers Radio to your family members and friends. Until this Saturday at 11 a.m. here on 860, or next Wednesday at 11, I wish all of you the very best. Happy Thanksgiving.
Have a great weekend, guys. And don't eat too much now. Bye now.